Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, a candid conversation as we learn about types of dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, frontal temporal, and Lewy body, and the effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, overcome obstacles, and find positive outcomes. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Well, what's up, Caregiver Nation? Glad to be with all of you today. You know, I get a lot of questions about various drugs that, you know, communities want to use, nursing homes want to use, for people with Alzheimer's and other dementias. And so I thought, you know, today's a good day to kind of go over the good, the bad, the ugly with the whole medication wheel and, you know, why do various communities, nursing homes use them? When should you step in and be an advocate for your family member? There's just a lot of issues that we need to tackle and talk about today regarding this. And the reason is because, in general, I personally feel that when you're working with someone that has Alzheimer's or any type of cognitive impairment in that realm, you're often better off not giving them any medications that are going to chemically change their brain, you know, be mind-bending or sedatives that will knock them out, because you end up with problems that result from that. As an example, I had a gentleman that expressed to me this past week that he was really frustrated that it was taking so long to give his wife a bath. And he wanted, you know, he wanted her to work with him more easily. He felt like everything was a no, no, no. And I've told you before, no just means that they've forgotten how to do whatever task you're asking them to do. And he seemed to forget that, and so he wanted to rush the system. If you have to rush, you shouldn't do it. You're going to get pushback. You're going to get resistance in this area, and it's just not worth it. So his bright idea was to take a drug that his doctor, her doctor, had prescribed that would help take the edge off of her anxiety and, you know, just resistance as a whole, which I, again, do not agree with. But he decided to double her medication because that made her more sleepy and less resistant. Well, the next day, he thought, well, that was working so well that he would double it again. And what ended up happening was he put her in the shower, and she lost her balance because she was sleepy and sedated, and she fell and broke her hip. Now, his job of giving her a bath or a shower is going to take 50% longer. So why? Why would you do that? Does that make it any sense to anybody? You know, a little bit of this doesn't get you a whole lot of that, generally, ever. And so, you know, hey, be careful what you ask for. You just might get it. And in this particular case, he wanted his wife to be more sedate and more cooperative, and he thought drugging her was the answer, and it ended up making her sleepy and her balance askew, and he ended up having a result from that he didn't like. And so now, not only is it more troublesome for him because she's been in the hospital, she's been in rehab, he's going to get a great big whopping bill and from all of that, and then when she gets out of the hospital, she's probably going to have to go to a skilled nursing for at least 4 to 6 weeks until her hip heals. Can't even tell you the cost that's going to be. That sticker shock is going to knock him out of the park. And then when he gets her home, he's probably going to have to hire a home care company to come in and assist him because she'll be in a wheelchair because she has Alzheimer's, and she's going to struggle with being able to know that she has to exercise and do various activities to strengthen her hips so she can walk again. So his little, half a pill solution cost him all this. So you need to think about things like this. You know, and why would you really want to give somebody a drug anyway, unless you're trying to target a symptom? Well, that question comes up all the time. So, you know, there are a lot of physical and chemical changes that occur anyway in the Alzheimer's brain. And the problem is that If you're trying to add something else to the mix, most of the time it's going to backfire on you. Now, that's not to say that there are people that, especially with Lewy body, might hit you, might scream at you, you know, things of that nature. In general, it's not going to benefit you, okay? So you have to think about, you know, what am I going to do? There's no drug out there that's going to reverse this disease. No drug that is going to reverse it. There's no antioxidants out there, grapes and blueberries and other things that you're eating. They may help stave off the symptoms for a while for people in the mild cognitive impairment stage, but it's certainly not going to reverse any of the beta amyloid or tau protein that is attacking the brain. So there are many, many, many experimental studies using drug therapies on Alzheimer's patients that have already been tried with varying degrees of success. So, you know, while we don't have any wonder drug at this point in time, we do have a couple of drugs that do assist in opening the blood flow to the brain and helping the person have more clarity while they're in the early stages of the diseases. But we've talked about this before. They have very limited efficacy. It's Exelon, which is a patch, and it's a cousin to Aricept, and then also Namenda. And so those drugs are really trying to target specific places in the brain and any deficiencies that you would have in the cholinergic system. The cholinergic system is it's really a group of cells and various neurofibrillary fibers that kind of bond together and are really trying to help your brain function and connect thoughts. Okay, and when we have a lack of that process, so the brain is not functioning easily, it's not flowing the way it should, the synapses are lost, there's really nothing more that the docs can do. Can they settle agitation? Can they settle anxiety? Yes. But when you do that, maybe you should look at something that is, you know, more of a calming factor that would work on someone's anxiety, not a chemical changing, you know, make your brain go a zillion different directions or put you to complete sleep like antipsychotics do. And so when we're trying to figure out what we need to do, you know, first of all, ask your doctor, but make sure that your doctor is not your primary care physician. This is where 90% of you run into problems. Ask that primary care physician if they can refer for you a neurologist who works with Alzheimer's or various dementias. Because I'm telling you, folks, you're going to get into a whole world of hurt if you're dealing with just your primary care. In general, they went to med school for 8 years. They did their studies. They did their residencies. But they did not have to study neurology. And they don't understand Alzheimer's. And what happens is you get them in a situation where you're involving them in the case of your loved one who is in a nursing home, an assisted living, a memory care unit, and for some reason, about 20 years ago, they started immediately going to the antipsychotics of Ativan, Seroquel, and Haldol. And your primary care doctor, for the most part, will take the recommendation of the community that your loved one lives in. And we, as advocates for the people that we love and care for, should be looking really closely at the fact of whether or not that primary care physician has ever really worked with somebody with Alzheimer's. I'm going to give you an example of why this matters. I've been trying to assist a couple of different families that the communities that their loved ones live in have been saying, oh, that their person has a psychosis. They have a hallucination. They're walking down the hall not wearing any clothes. They're refusing to bathe. And so their go-to, their automatic go-to is let's throw an antipsychotic at them. And antipsychotics, they have serious effects and repercussions from taking them. And I'm going to get into some of those here in just a few minutes. But why would they go there? Well, because it's easier, honestly, to deal with a person and get them to comply with what you need when you give them some drug that enables you to have more control and disables them from having control over their resistance. So maybe you just need to pick a different time to give them a bath or a shower. Maybe it's okay if they're too hot or too cold, putting on too many clothes when they're, you know, it's the middle of the summer and that doesn't make any sense to us, or they're too hot and start peeling off their clothes and walking down the hall. Hey, here's a thought to those communities out there. Why don't you just walk up to the person and say, hey, Joe, or whoever it is, you know, it looks like maybe you lost your shorts. Why don't we go back to your room and see if we can find them? It's a really hot day. Would you like to just have a nice, cool rag to wipe yourself off with and get cooled off? If we go and put some pants and a shirt on, I could walk you outside and we could feel some fresh air. Right? I mean, where's that thought process? Why do we have to throw drugs at these people? It doesn't work, you know? So you really need to think about, you know, what are the dosage amounts that they're asking you that they want to give? Do they want to give 25 milligrams of Seroquel? And if they say PRN, that means as needed. Oh, that's a scary place to go. As needed when they think it's needed. As needed as you know, whenever they feel like, oh, every 8 hours we should slap this person with a drug. I get really pissed off about this kind of stuff because the truth of the matter is, they are chemical restraints. And if they're not sitting down with you and saying, listen, your person has changed stages. They are moving into a different stage. We see some complicating patterns here. This is what we've tried to use to redirect, to work with them to the best of our ability. We're using their history to know how to calm them down and how to get through to them when they seem to be upset or anxious or filled with, you know, anger or something like that. And if they're not doing that or saying, you know, at this point in time, we might need to take them out of assisted living and move them into our memory unit. And this is what this change would look like. This is the financial change. This is the change in care. This is the scope of the needs of that person, and they are shifting. But when they're not doing that, when they just say, let's take a drug, Ativan, Seroquel, or Haldol, and give it to this person, that's no good. That's no good. And especially if they say, we just want to give this to them just to take the edge off. The edge off of what? The edge off of what? What do they want to calm down? What symptom are they trying to to treat. And once they do treat it, are they going to back them down off that drug, or are they just going to be on it forever and ever? Amen. Well, the latter is the answer. And this is where we get people sitting in wheelchairs with their heads slumped over, having, you know, slobber coming out of their mouth, holding a baby doll in communities. Now, you know, you all have the right. If you have a loved one that you're working with and you take them into these communities and you really kind of washing your hands of it and you want to just move on and go back to your life and let somebody else take care of that person, then I guess this path would be okay for you. But if you're like me and you care for the person that you love, don't go down this route. There's no positive ending to this route. And it can cause a lot of problems. It can really cause issues with other medications that they're taking. If they're taking heart medications, if they're taking blood pressure medications, if they're taking high cholesterol medications, all these things can make a difference. And how are they giving them to them? Are they giving them to them in a shot like they do Haldol? These drugs originally were designed to work with people with mental illnesses, schizophrenia, bipolar, manic depression. Alzheimer's is not a mental illness. It's a disease. There's a difference. And the way the brain is malfunctioning with a mental illness is completely different than the way it malfunctions with Alzheimer's. And doctors need to get that straight. And if they can't get it straight, you're going to have to be an advocate and help them understand it. It really, really makes a difference, okay? So I want to talk to you about a couple of these kind of symptomatic treatments that they think might slow the progression to a degree for people with Alzheimer's. So, you know, in especially with Alzheimer's, you've got that cholinergic deficit that I was talking about. And in the early stages, you can give Aricept to somebody and it will address that deficit. Okay, and if it works, it's called Dazonapil. That's the generic on it. Dazonapil. So you can give that drug to them for maybe 6 to 8 months to try to open the blood flow in the brain, but then it kind of loses its efficacy until the late stages. And they do realize now that we can consider that drug, which is not an antipsychotic, it's just one of the Alzheimer's drugs, that seems to work better with people with Lewy body dementia in the late stages. And it might just help with their speech, their language, so on and so forth. Okay? And if you can't take that drug because it upsets your stomach, there's a lot of people that it agitates almost like a urinary tract infection. It causes problems with not only your stomach but your gastrointestinal system and things like that. And if you can't take that, then they will try a different one called Namenda. And Namenda is it's along the same lines. But it has just different components that deal with the brain in a little bit of a different way, not terribly much. But the idea is really just to open that blood flow and help you to think more clearly, okay? And you just really have to be careful when you take these medications, any medications, because they could cause problems if you're taking other multiple medications. Now, of those three, Exelon is the best. It has the lowest potential for negative interactions with other prescribed medications. So it's a patch form of Aricept, but it works really well for about 6 months to a year when somebody has these early, early stages. So, you know, it's really it's something that is passionate to me because I probably have talked about it a little bit, and I'm really not supposed to because we won a lawsuit, and I can't name names. I can't talk about the actual lawsuit itself, and you know any settlements or anything like that, or talk about what the community was. But my mom was a pretty easygoing person. She was pretty happy-go-lucky. She became very childlike with her imagination and her processes, her activities of daily living. She sort of went back all the way to really almost being like a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old playing with stuffed animals. And she ended up in the first community that she was in because the scope of care had become such that she was incontinent and had other issues, was wandering, letting people in the house. It was too expensive to have home care with us 24 hours a day or even more than, 8 hours a day. We did pay somebody 8 hours a day, a lovely person named Amy, to come in and work with my mom. And she did a great job, but then it just got too expensive, so we had to look at more long-term care options. And the very first day she was in this nursing home, and I call them nursing homes for a reason. They're the ones that I think give really crappy care. I don't call them care communities. They are the ones that we have nightmares about. You walk into one and say, "Dear God in heaven, don't anybody ever put me in a place like this." You beg your family members, "If something happens to me, please don't put me in a place like this." Well, there you have it. This was it. It didn't look like it when we walked in. They said all the right things, but the very first thing they did was once she got in there, they said we couldn't see her for 2 weeks, and she cried. So on the very first night, they hit her with Seroquel, the middle antipsychotic. And I'm telling you, they never looked back. They should have been like NASCAR drivers. They went so fast down that road, we couldn't even see them anymore. And the next thing you know, they've got her on this as needed. They didn't ask us. They didn't get our approval. They just went ahead and gave her these antipsychotics. And it went from 25 milligrams once to 25 twice a day. And then it went to 50 twice a day, and then it got up from 100, 100, 100, 200, 200, 400, 600 milligrams, which, by the way, folks, is 6 times the legal limit of what you can give a person with Alzheimer's. And so you can see how it ended up in court. But at any rate, not only that, they were giving her Ativan, which is the lowest of the 3 antipsychotics. And on top of that, when she started becoming more resistant to it and saying, "They're trying to kill me, they're trying to kill me," they added Haldol, intravenous shots of Haldol, 5 milligrams every time, 12 times in a 6-month period. This is what happens when you're just kind of plugging along and you don't understand, and they should never, ever, ever give those drugs without your knowledge or permission if you're the power of attorney. But guess what? They do it anyway. They do it anyway. And if you say no, that you don't want them to give those drugs, then they slap you with a 30-day get out of town paper. And the next thing you know, you're evicted. That's what happens. That's what happens. But I would argue all day long not to give these drugs rather than and get evicted, find another place, than have them drug somebody till they're just absolutely catatonic. To me, that is just absolutely ridiculous. They drugged my mom so bad she couldn't hold her head up. And she literally had Parkinson-style shakes with her hands. It's just absolutely nuts. So you have to think about these kinds of things. Now, in just a minute, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, I'm going to talk to you about what do these tranquilizers and high doses of these major tranquilizers do? And when should you use them and when shouldn't you use them? Are they a chemical restraint or are they not a chemical restraint? These are big issues and we need to take a look at them. And I hope if any of you are out there today listening to this and saying, "Geez, they've got my mom on Seroquel and every time I go in, she's sleepy." Well, you know what? You back that stuff down, and she might be able to actually talk to you. There you have it. Well, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Living and working with Alzheimer's and other dementias can often be challenging. Summit Resilience Training provides education utilizing non-medical approaches for those who work with our friends affected by dementia. Believing families still need one-on-one assistance, we provide classes which help them understand the diseases affecting their loved ones, offering strategies and techniques for success with activities of daily living and working with confusing behaviors. We offer in-home assessments to clarify symptoms of dementia diseases and help families work together to find moments of joy while living with memory loss and impairment. Education programs instilling person-centered care philosophies are offered for professional caregivers working in communities and homes, which can be customized for their staff. Training is also available for first responders, such as law enforcement, fire, and EMT personnel. We are passionate that people with dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and others, are approached with compassion and understanding, and those who work with them have all the tools they need for success. Call us at Summit Resilience Training, 303-420-6988, to schedule a class or in-home assessment. Visit our website at summitresiliencetraining.com for more information.
Welcome back to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, so before the break, I was talking about the medication wheel. It's almost like hamsters on a wheel going round and round and round. And antipsychotics are serious go-tos for care communities, memory units, assisted livings, and especially nursing homes. And so I want to explain this a little bit to you, okay? Because the bottom line is those are psychiatric medications. Ativan, Seroquel, and Haldol. They are psychiatric medications, okay? But here's the deal. If you give those to people with Alzheimer's, you could have some problems, okay? So, yeah, psychiatric medicines can be effective sometimes in managing some symptoms of Alzheimer's or maybe even Lewy body. I think more Lewy body than anything. But as we look at all these different medications, you have to look at side effects. And some side effects can be quite adverse. I mean, they can really be severe. They can develop, and these medications will require close monitoring by these doctors. But you know what? Generally, that doesn't happen. So we don't know to respond. We don't know what we don't know. We don't know what to do to help our loved one. But here's the bottom line. People who are elderly, just people who are elderly, not even people with Alzheimer's, generally have a lower tolerance for these kinds of medications than a young person does, right? And so when you have a brain impairment, that will really interfere with the effectiveness of the medication. So now you're taking a mind-bending chemical and you're putting it on a person that already has an imbalance in their brain, right? So if you're going to start with any of these drugs in the first place, you need to start with a low dosage, 10 milligrams, 15 milligrams, 25 milligrams per day, no more than that. No more than that. If you really want to take the edge off of something, that's where you do it, okay? Because the side effects are more likely to occur at those higher dosages, right? And if the person's going to experience adverse side effects, these probably will occur in a milder form at a lower dose. And you want to make sure you don't want to have anybody getting, you know, so like they're frothing at the mouth. They're staring straight ahead. You know, it's critical to pay attention to this and look at over a period of time. Can your person tolerate this drug? Should they tolerate this drug? Why are we not using person-centered care approaches first? If you think they've tried those and then you slap them with those drugs, then that's, you know, you're going to get what you get, just like the guy who drugged his wife and she fell, right? So only a doctor should monitor the dosages and make changes to them. Don't do it on your own. Do not do it on your own. You don't know how these drugs work. You don't know how they can possibly affect the person. This guy is not isolated. This is why I'm talking about this today. I've had a lot of people tell me that they will, you know, change the dosage of the drug of their loved one based on the times they need to sleep or, you know, have them sleeping so that they can get something else done. People, that's dangerous. That is dangerous, okay? Really think about that. Because one of the things that you could cause by giving somebody, you know, like even Ativan or Seroquel, especially Ativan or Seroquel, could be you could end up with them having hypertension. And hypertension is developed because of low blood pressure. And if they have low blood pressure, guess what? They fall. That's what happens. When people's blood pressure drops, they typically will faint or run into a wall or have dizziness, loss of balance, all those kinds of things. You increase that risk exponentially when you give too much of these drugs or when a care community gives too much of these drugs. Another thing that they could have is we call them extrapyramidal reactions, which causes decreased or slower movements, muscle rigidity, resting hand tremor, kind of like a person with Parkinson's disease, right? A shuffling gait. They're walking, you know, their eyes are facing straight down, and they're walking with just a little shuffle as they walk, little tiny steps that they're just scooting their feet along the floor. They might drool. They might have a mask-like face. All those drugs I told you they gave my mom, those were daily, up and down, literally. I'll say it again. She would have like 25 milligrams of Ativan twice a day, and then they would give her Seroquel in doses of 100 milligrams a day, 200, then 400, then 600, then 200, then 400, then 600. And what happens is they sit there and drool. And she literally, her hands would shake with that extrapyramidal reaction. And they call that tardive dyskinesia. That's what it is. She could never hold a cup again. She could never hold a cup again. When I went to hug her, she would shake so bad she couldn't even put her arms around me. My mom was the best hugger in the world. That makes me mad as hell. Still to this day. She died in 2012, and I'm still angry about it. Because some doctor and some nurse decided that they were going to shut her up and put her in a wheelchair sitting in the hallway, frothing at the mouth. And luckily, we were trying to bring forth Project Lifesaver in my hometown. It's a watch that people can wear that has a radio transmitter on it, and they can follow that radio transmission if that person were to wander. We know 90% of people with Alzheimer's will wander at some point in time. And it was developed to be able to track a person if they got lost. And so we were trying to bring this to my hometown, my sister Sue and I. And so we had a video crew from the local TV station, WAND, come and videotape my mom. And she had only been at the community, the nursing home, for a month. And then they came back again when it got adopted by the local sheriff and police department and was put into play. And they interviewed her again, and she couldn't even talk. And when we challenged the community, they evicted her. They said they would wean her down off of everything, and they didn't wean her off of anything. They literally cut her medication off cold turkey, and guess what? She had a heart attack. And when she went to the hospital, they gave her another 5 milligram intravenous shot of Haldol. Really? Really, people? I mean, this is why I'm so intense today. This is an emotional conversation to me because it really makes me angry that we still do this today. My mom died in 2012, August 25th of 2012. And I've been working with a family right now for about a month. And this nursing home, this assisted living and nursing home that actually does have a memory unit here in the Denver metro area, in Aurora, by the way, so Aurorans, watch out. They are trying to drug this woman's mom, who is a lot like my mom. She you know, has anxiety at times, but she's had more of it during this COVID virus. And so they've decided to tell the family that she's having a psychosis, that she's having a hallucination, and so they need to throw these antipsychotics at her. And they just are standing firm on it. They're doubling down on it. And so now they've called this family in on Thursday to have a conference, and I told them, I said, be prepared. They're going to evict you. They're going to give you a 30-day eviction. It's give her the antipsychotic drugs or not. This is how it works. So if you're having troubles like this with anybody that is caring for your loved one and they're asking you to give them drugs that will sedate them and make them sleep and alter them, you really should take a good hard look at this. So except in really ordinary circumstances, extraordinary circumstances, like somebody is absolutely manic and busting up the house, something like that, the use of major tranquilizers as a chemical restraint is inappropriate. All day long, I will call it a chemical restraint because that is exactly what it is. Okay? That's exactly what it is. And when major tranquilizers are given to reduce agitation and restlessness, but instead produce the symptoms I just told you about, the tardive dyskinesia, the mask-like face, then all of a sudden, it's a game changer. And when that happens, you can't come back. Once you've given them those drugs and you've overdosed them you've overdosed those folks on these drugs, and anytime it's over 2 months, you can't come back. They'll never be the same again. They'll never be the same again. And then you have all these other issues going on. It's a big deal, people. It's a big deal. And if people with Alzheimer's disease have taken major tranquilizers for a long time, they run a really, really strong risk of getting that tardive dyskinesia. And that side effect is a nightmare. I mean, I'm not kidding. My mom had this. And it's characterized by involuntary lip and tongue motions, the writhing movements of their hands and arms. You know, they're constantly wiping, you know, grabbing their hands and kind of wringing their hands and things like that. They have serious tremors. They have their speech completely obliterated. They can't walk anymore. They have trouble breathing. And when you reduce the dosage or add an extra anti-Parkinson's medication to reduce the tremors, and they don't have Parkinson's, then you've really messed them up. Oh, my God. So here's the bottom line. The best treatment in this case, seriously, the best treatment is preventative. Avoid the use of major tranquilizers whenever possible. Or low doses if they have Lewy body. I'm sorry I get so mad about this and I get so freaked out about it. But I'm telling you, the people, this is amazing. Just to give you an idea of why it makes me so angry with my mom, the amount of the Haldol they gave her, she was 5 feet tall if she was on her tiptoes. She was tiny. And she weighed about 125, 130 pounds. Okay? That's pretty small. And the drug that they gave her, Haldol, the dosage, 5 milligrams intravenously, could kill a man 6'5" and 250 pounds. You heard me right. It could literally fall a person that is 6'5" and 250 pounds. And she was 5 feet tall and 120 pounds. And they gave her 12 shots of this over a 3-month period. Yeah. Yeah. So it got so bad that she was absolutely catatonic. And we ended up taking her out of that place. The only funny thing about it was the day that my sisters went to get her and told her that they were getting her out, she jumped right out of bed, grabbed this great big huge bear that was about half her size that I had given her. It was her best friend and toy. And she ran for the door. I mean, they couldn't even stop her. One of my sisters had to go after her, and the other one was packing her clothes and was going to meet him out in the parking lot. And they had, it was so cute. She had little gray hair. She was so cute, and she was so pretty. And she, when they got to the other community that we were going to have her in, and I call it a community because they were a beautiful community. It was a one lane. They called it Halcyon Lane, with the rooms on each side of the aisle, and at the end of the lane was a T where they had their lunch room and they had their activity room. It was nothing to speak of. You know what I mean? I swear to God, it couldn't have been more than, you know, I mean, my house is bigger than that unit was. But when they got there, they gave my mom a little plant with a cute little flower to give to Kim, the head nurse. And they told our mom that she was a good friend, and she handed Kim the pot, and Kim hugged her, and she said she just about wanted to cry the way my mom shook from all these massive drugs they had given her. And for the first 2 nights that she was there, there was a guy, orderly, caregiver there that just absolutely loved her. And he literally laid in bed and held her to keep her calm that first night. And I'm telling you what, when she died, six people from that Halcyon unit in Illinois, in the middle of nowhere, they wanted to speak at her funeral. They loved her that much. So tell me, do you think that medication was necessary? It took her smile away. It took her confidence away. It took her life away. It took away her dignity. There's no reason in the whole freaking world we need to throw these antipsychotics at people that have Alzheimer's. Just learn redirection skills. If your loved ones are in a place and they are literally drooling at the mouth and you have a care plan meeting and they say, well, she's sleeping all the time, and you're thinking, well, this is kind of weird because just last week or 2 months ago she was up moving around and stuff. It's the drugs. I've tried for the last 50 minutes, but it's hard for me to express how angry it makes me. It makes me want to drop an F-bomb because it's seriously ridiculous. It's antiquated. It's not necessary. And I challenge any of you out there to look at the information about Seroquel and Haldol. But look at Seroquel. That's the main go-to. And it says right on its packaging, it is not recommended for people with Alzheimer's. And yet, these doctors, these nursing homes, as soon as somebody is doing something that's a little strange, our flavor of the week this week for the family I'm helping that's going to get evicted this Thursday probably, is the woman was folding her clothes and putting them on her bed. Really? And they call that a psychosis. They call that a hallucination. I call it boredom during COVID. They also said she thinks people are coming into her room. And when we dug a little deeper, we were able to look at the nurse's notes. And twice a night, somebody was coming in her room just to check on her. So she would wake up and see somebody in her room. and think that they were in there to steal something from her. Now, that's a delusion. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. But that's a delusion. That's not a hallucination. And you can't even call it a hallucination when somebody was actually coming into the room. Check out the facts when they tell you that your loved one is behaving a certain way, that they've hit someone, that they have, you know, walked down the hallway and wearing no clothes. Find out what happened. Was the community on 90 degrees and it was hot and a person with Alzheimer's doesn't know anything else but to start stripping their clothes off? Did somebody slap them at the dinner table or steal their food and they smacked the person next to them and was trying to tell them, that's my food, don't take it? Was there a reason for it, or are they just being agitative and a danger to other residents? I think 90% of the time, it's something that could be easily observed and apply a strategy or a technique to it to try to curb that behavior. But medication, no. I'll tell you, we need a revolt. We need a revolt in the United States. We need a revolt in all the countries that are listening, my friends in Australia, my friends in Germany, France, everywhere. If they are giving your people with Alzheimer's antipsychotics, I'll say it again, Ativan, Seroquel, or Haldol, start asking questions. Hopefully get your loved ones off of those damn medications. If they've been on them for months and months, then you might have a can of worms you can't even imagine with the side effects that come from this. So, well, there's been my soapbox today, huh? But really, seriously, look at these different scenarios and make sure that you understand what kind of dosages are being given, what medications are they mixing with, do they actually need them? What kind of redirection skills have they used prior to this? Why did they just go to this drug? If they say they want to give it to take the edge off of something, ask specifically what the symptom is and when they think they're going to solve it. Don't let these people just drug your loved ones for no reason. Throw medication at them and not have a reason of what they're trying to cure. And I guarantee you, 90% of the times when they give these drugs, they're not necessary. There you have it. All right. Well, hopefully I won't be as fired up next week. But, you know, it just really amazes me that all these years later, you know, my mom got diagnosed when I was 26 years old. I am now 58. She died 8 years ago, and it doesn't feel like anything's changed. Well, that's not true. The one thing that has changed is that we have more person-centered care communities now, people that are doing the right thing. One that I absolutely love here in town is Spring Ridge. Spring Ridge Park Memory Unit, they have 37 residents and not one of them are on any of the antipsychotic drugs. Not one person. So there you have it. I rest my case. I'll see you next week on Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz. To learn more about her resources, services, classes, or to book speaking engagements, visit Jill's website at summitresiliencetraining.com. A new podcast drops every Tuesday, so join us as we learn more about dementias, resilience, and overcoming obstacles to find a positive outcome. Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz can be found on your favorite podcast provider. Please subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. Musical and technical support provided by Brian Hunter. See you next week.